Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Throughout the pandemic, Tulsa Ballet has persevered in presenting world-class dance within the strict guidelines surrounding COVID. In Tulsa Ballet's case, that has meant protecting dancers by putting them in small protective groups of pods and building a state-of-the-art ventilation systems for audiences and dancers alike in their Studio K facility. This weekend, the ballet will welcome audiences to Studio K for their signature series, featuring reduced-capacity performances of new work by world-class choreographers working remotely. And for those who don't wish to venture out in person, there will also be virtual performances this Saturday at 7 and Sunday, March 14th at 5 o'clock. The program features a world premiere of a new work by a top young English choreographer, Andrew McNichol. A delayed world premiere by Yuri Yanofsky, which was originally set on the company last spring before COVID shuttered all performances, as well as the return of Jennifer Archibald's modern Parhelia, which originally was performed in September of 2018. The signature series at Studio K takes place this weekend, Friday through Sunday, and next weekend as well. I'm joined by Tulsa Ballet Artistic Director Marcello Angelini to talk about the signature series this weekend. Marcello Angelini, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, even though doing it by telephone is new.
Well, the ballet opens the Signature Symphony this weekend at Studio K with two world premieres and the return of a recent premiere. And you're going to have a mix of in-person performances and virtual performances as well. What has it been like for your company this season? Your company has had as many or more performances than most other arts organizations this season. But it's got to be a big stress not knowing if a performance is going to take place or how it's going to take place or if what you're rehearsing is what you'll actually perform. What has this season been like for the company?
Well, I always compare it to what I hear postpartum syndrome is like. I have no memories of the past 12 months. I mean, you wake up in the morning and you come here and you deal with the situation. You start planning and then something else changes and you change the plan. I think between March 18th of 2020 and, yesterday, we put together 10 or 11 different budgets with 10 or 11 different seasons. It has been difficult. The thing is, you know, the performing arts have been affected very much by COVID because, especially in dance, because we have to be close to each other. So the first thing that we did when we realized that we had to shut down, we hired an infectious disease consultant, Dr. Jaggers. She is phenomenal. She advised a couple of White Houses, and she was also the head of the infectious disease fast response team at Duke's University. And so she created our protocols, and it took a long time. We went back to work in September. We stopped on March 17th. I will never forget that date because that was the first run-through of Vendetta, a Mafia Story by Annabelle Lopez Ochoa. Unfortunately, I missed it because that day was crazy. We were deciding what to do, but it was the last thing that we did in 2020 for that season. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I had to call the company and tell everybody that we were going to stop operations. So after that, we hired Dr. Jaggers, we created all the safety protocols, we came back to work administrators in September, the dancers came back in at the end of September, and we have been working based on those protocols, which is pods. We are working in pods. We have 8 dancers per pod. Now for this last performance, the upcoming performance, we're going to be in pods of 11 dancers. And it was clear that we couldn't do anything already choreographed because of the wearing of masks. Obviously, you can't do a 20-minute ballet if you're wearing a mask because you're out of breath. So the ballets had to be shorter. We couldn't have intermissions because we don't want to encourage gathering of people in the lobby. So the performances had to be shorter, and that meant we had to create pretty much every single work that we have performed up to this point. But then, you know, Dr. Jaggers tells us, no, you cannot have any choreographers in the building. So how do we create works without having choreographers in the building? So start experimenting with Zoom. You can imagine the internet being temperamental, losing connection every 5 minutes, especially with Italy, with Rome. A little bit better with Amsterdam, a little bit better with London. But, I mean, we have been creating now 8 brand new works, and the only choreographer that has been in town, in the studio, has been Makong. Everybody else, they have been as far as Amsterdam, Annabelle Lopez Ochoa, Luciano Canito from Rome, Andrew McNichol from London, Yuri Yanovsky from Boston, and that's how we have been working, you know. And that brings in a new host of challenges, because obviously when a choreographer shows you something and you are watching it on the TV, it's different than the choreographer being in the studio with you. The choreographer is facing you, so whenever you see him going to the right, that means you have to go to the left, you need to reverse everything. It has been a challenge. But I'm so happy that we have been performing and the dancers have been performing, that my biggest fear is to be, unquote, presiding over the lost generation of dancers, dancers that basically don't dance for a year and a half, for 2 years, and then what happens to them?
Yeah, they may never get to the form that they had before the shutdown.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't imagine what it's like to learn a piece of choreography via a two-dimensional way of seeing it, because, you know, the whole idea of creating choreography is like your whole body's in movement. It's three-dimensional, and yet you're looking at Zoom or, you know, video, in which you're only seeing the movement in two dimension.
Well, yeah, and for the dancers, at least they have large screens that they can see the choreographer. But imagine the choreographer that is watching the dancers on his 15-inch computer screen. I mean, for them to just understand if they're doing it right or wrong, and to give them feedback without being in the studio. And dance is physical, and you also rely on the energy that you create with the dancers when you are choreographing a piece. But through the computer, it doesn't come across. So it's more of a cerebral exercise rather than an instinctive exercise. For example, the person that is a wonder boy is Andrew McNichol, whose work we are premiering this week. I mean, Andrew, probably because he lives in a flat in London, and the flats in London are rather small, I mean, he choreographed sitting down. Now, Andrew is 28. He's full of energy, but he has to sit down, because if he stands up, he kicks everything around him, and is able to articulate everything that he sees in his mind through words, in a way that the dancers understand exactly what he wants, not only as far as the steps, but as far as the physicality of every step.
What a great challenge for the choreographers as well, because probably most of them are used to expressing what they want through movement, through moving themselves, or actually moving the dancer, touch. Move your hand like this, move your arm like this, move this way. And now they're having to vocalize that, and that obviously will be a skill that will help them down the road, but that's probably a difficult skill to learn on the fly.
Yes, and it's not like they're getting used to working this way because everybody is working this way. As far as I know, we are the only company that decided to go down that path, to ask choreographers to create ballets via Zoom. And so every time I contact somebody, I would love for you to do a new work for us, but it has to be via Zoom. What do you mean via Zoom? Well, you can't come into the building. And so there is usually that pause. Well, how do you do that? So the first time, obviously, Annabelle is fearless. So she said, yeah, sure, no problem. And then every time I invite a new choreographer, I tell them, well, we have already done this with 3 or 4 different choreographers, and I can assure you that it's possible to do it. Let me send a video of the pieces that other choreographers have created via Zoom. And then, you know, they see the pieces and they say, wow, you know, so it's possible. What I don't tell them is the process that they will have to go through from day one to the premiere, because that's not pleasant. But the end product is pleasant.
Well, tell us about the three ballets that people will be able to see either in person at Studio K with limited seating, social distance, limited seating at Studio K, or there are two virtual performances as well. Let's begin with Andrew McNichol. You mentioned he's a young choreographer. When you see his work, it is absolutely full of energy. There's this, even when the dancers are moving slowly, there's this sense of kinetic energy that seems to be in his work. Tell us a little bit about this ballet, What If?
Well, Andrew is a power of nature. I met him probably 5 years ago in London. I was talking with Wayne McGregor when he was here for Infra, and I was asking him about the new British generation of choreographer, and he said, you should really talk with Andrew McNichol. He's very young, but he's so talented. And so the next time I was in London, I think it was over December, January of 2016 or 17, we had coffee together, and I mean, he was a kid, and he's 28 years old. And so I was asking him about his career as a choreographer, and I asked him, so which one was your first big piece? And he said, well, I choreographed my first big piece when I was 19, right out of ballet school, for the Royal Ballet of Flanders. That's a company of 50 dancers. So imagine this 19-year-old kid right out of school, so without any professional experience, walking into a studio with corps ballet soloists and principals, 50 of them in the studio, and he has to tell them what to do. And it was a long piece, about 45 minutes. And I mean, when he tells you the story, he had the time of his life. So that tells you that he's born to do this kind of work. As far as the work that he's doing for us is phenomenal. So I told Andrew, I said, Andrew, now keep in mind they are dancing with masks. So they have 30% less oxygen. Make sure that the piece is not terribly difficult and taxing on the dancers. Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you should see it. The thing is like being shot out of a cannon. It's full of energy, it's bubbly, it's outrageously difficult technically, and boy, it's so breathy. But at the end of the day, I saw a run through a couple of days ago, the first time they ran it from beginning to the end, and it blew me away. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And it's his style. It's very British, very, in a way, angular, but full of energy and movements that you don't know where they come from, because they come from him.
And that whole new generation of British choreographers, it's a very different look, isn't it?
Oh, very different, very different. But Andrew is more rooted in the classical ballet style, where somebody like McGregor is very, very, very contemporary. No, Andrew is actually the evolution of classical ballet. It's the next step in classicism, and that's what I love it. I mean, the piece is on point. It's full of very difficult technical, classical ballet technical combinations and steps. So he's a classicist, but he has taken classical ballet to the next step, sort of like Yuri Posukov in this country.
Now, it's very interesting. His own story is sort of interesting because when COVID shut down everything, he was on the verge of premiering his own company. And, of course, that has now been in limbo ever since. He was going to premiere his own dance company in April of last year. He's on the verge of taking that next step as a choreographer.
Well, yeah, having his own company, the Andrew McNichol's Collective, and that's also a very interesting company because it's composed of the superstars of all the big European companies that he has worked with. I mean, wherever he goes, people love working with him. And so if he asks them, listen, I'm doing this project. Do you want to be part of my company for this project? Every ballet star says, absolutely, we want to be a part of it. And so when you look at the who is who of the Andrew McNichol's Collective, at least the company that was supposed to premiere last April, it's like, oh my gosh, those are all European powerhouses dancers. And that's the kind of dancer that he expects to find in the studio when he starts choreographing, because that's the kind of dancer that can do his work.
Well, his ballet is titled What If, which will receive its world premiere in the Signature Series at Studio K, which begins this Friday with performances this weekend and next weekend with virtual performances Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 5. And there's still tickets for the in-person performances as well as virtual performances. My guest today is Marcello Angelini, Artistic Director of Tulsa Ballet. Now, the next two ballets have been previously created for Tulsa Ballet, but one is now just getting its premiere, and that is Yuri Yanofsky's At the End Of. Tell us the story. This was supposed to be done last spring, correct?
Yes. That was Yuri's work was supposed to premiere in April of 2020. And so he came, he choreographed it, and we were rehearsing it for the premiere, and then we had to shut down. So it sat dormant since April of 2020. It's such a wonderful work. I mean, Yuri is so talented. I mean, so talented. His works are so fun, so entertaining, so original, full of energy, and this new work is no different. Unfortunately, I never saw a run-through of it last year because he finished it while COVID was starting to gather momentum, and so I was so happy to see it on stage finally this season.
Now, were any changes had to be made? Because obviously it was choreographed in a pre-COVID sort of situation. Did you have to make changes to the ballet?
Well, we had to make quite a few changes because some of the dancers that were in that piece last year, that piece was created for the second company and will be performed by the second company. Well, a lot of those dancers eventually moved up to the main company, and so we had to reteach the new dancers of the second company this piece, and you know, every dancer is different, and the beauty about creations is that they are a collaboration between the choreographer and the dancer. And so Yuri immediately jumped on Zoom, now that he's an expert on Zoom because he has created a piece for us for the main company on Zoom. He jumped on Zoom and basically re-choreographed half of the ballet so that they can have some... The way I describe creations is the difference between wearing a suit that you buy at Saks Fifth Avenue, a very good suit, or one that is tailor-made for you. And that's the beauty of having ballets created on you and for you, because eventually they have to fit you perfectly. And so in the spirit of creations, Yuri has adapted this work for this group of TV tours, and they look fantastic in it. I mean, they look fantastic in it. I look at them, and yesterday I told Daniel, I said, this second company is better than so many main companies around the country.
And so I guess the signature series will feature both Ballet 2 and the main company through the evening with each performance, correct?
Absolutely. We are going to have two pieces by the main company, Andrew's piece and Jennifer's piece, and in the middle is going to be the second company.
Now, you said that, this piece has a lot of energy. Yanofsky was a longtime principal dancer for Boston Ballet. His sister is a prima ballerina at Royal Ballet. So it seems like he would be steeped in the tradition of ballet, but does his choreographic style reflect that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The thing that, and this probably my taste, but the thing I love about Andrew and Yuri is that in their choreography, you can see the evolution of classical ballet. Now, dance, the arts, anything in life and on earth is constantly evolving. And if it stops evolving, then it becomes a piece of museum, and as such doesn't belong anymore in a live performance, but it belongs at Philbrook or Gilcrease. And the beauty about the works of Yuri and the works of Andrew is that they start from the knowledge of classical ballet, but they take that and they evolve it 2, 3, 4, 5 steps forward so that classical ballet becomes relevant in 2021, so that we are not watching the Sleeping Beauty petit pas of the 19th century, but we are watching classical ballet the way it can be performed today, now that dancers are, you know, 10 times more athletic, 10 times faster, 10 times more agile than the dancers of the 19th century.
Now, earlier you were talking about how Yuri, in this case, had to reset this ballet for different dancers. Obviously, when he's already cast a look for a particular part in the ballet, you have a sort of an archetype. But what sort of subtle changes does a choreographer make to the choreography based on the fact that each dancer is unique and has a different way of doing a move, a step, a turn. What sort of little things does a choreographer do to help that dancer put across the movement he's trying to put across?
I think it's more a question of, it's more of an organic process and almost instinctive process. Choreographers, you know, they rely on their instinct. They will look at the dancer doing a solo they created for another dancer, and they look at a certain part of the solo and say, oh, that doesn't look good on you. Can you try this? Can you try the other? And through this process of collaboration, they find a new look, a new avenue to say the same thing, you know, to establish the same kind of a statement, but with different words.
My guest today is Marcello Angelini, Artistic Director of Tulsa Ballet, the Signature Series at Studio K, their latest series, which will take place this weekend and next weekend at Studio K at the Ballet Headquarters. There'll be in-person performances Friday through Sunday, but there'll also be virtual performances a Saturday at 7 and then Sunday, March 14th at 5 o'clock. If you don't feel ready to face the arts in person, you can face it virtually. But again, there are good seats still available for the Studio K. There's been more seats released to sell, but again, everything is social distance. The final piece that you'll be performing is a piece that was actually created a couple of years ago for the company, Jennifer Archibald's Parhelia. Now, this is a very different piece than these two first pieces, because this is more of a stretch for a classically trained dancer. At least that's what Jennifer Archibald says. Tell us a little bit about this particular piece.
Yes, it is a stretch for a classically trained ballet dancer. What I love about Jennifer is that she's on the opposite side of the spectrum from choreographers like Andrew and Yuri. Her works, her movement is primal, is grounded, is very contemporary / modern dance, but at the same time, it's charged with emotions and feelings. Every time I watch Parhelia, I know that the ballet doesn't have a story. It's not a narrative piece. It's an abstract piece, but it grabs your stomach and your emotions, and that's something that Jennifer is able to do with every one of her works. She has done two pieces for the second company, and now this one for the main company, and another one, major one, next year. And she's just a power of a force of nature. Now, Parhelia is a little bit bigger than the other pieces. It has 10 dancers, and it's the first time we attempt to do a slightly larger work, an existing work, in one of our triple bills this year. And it has been a challenge because, for example, there has been one injury. One gentleman got injured, and we didn't have enough dancers in the pod to put an understudy in. So what we had to do was to move a dancer from another pod to the pod of Parhelia, which meant that the dancer had to be tested. We also had to move his girlfriend that is in the same pod because they live together. So we had quite a few challenges, but again, the work is fantastic and the dancers look great and they love it. They love it, especially after dancing a piece like McNichols that is so difficult technically, just getting down in the earth and, you know, and doing something that comes from the gut rather than from the classical technique is really satisfying for them.
I was struck by some of her comments about what she was trying to achieve with this piece coming from the modern dance side to ballet. She said, you know, ballet dancers tend to always look in the mirror to make sure that they're being perfect, that they're, you know, their movement is perfectly capturing what they're supposed to be doing. And she goes, I don't want them to look in the mirror. I want them to have that. She goes, ragged is, even a little bit of ragged is all right in conveying what I'm trying to convey about this particular piece. Now, as a ballet classicist, that's probably got to be hard for you to hear something like that.
No, absolutely not.
No? Okay.
Absolutely not. Yeah. No. No, you see, because the problem with dancers that only dance one type of dance is that they become extremely thin, one-dimensional, because by virtue of dancing works like Jennifer's or Killian or Duato, works that have weight, that have depth, well, eventually your classical movement will acquire a different kind of weight. And when you dance Sleeping Beauty, well, you will dance it with a totally different kind of look and a totally different kind of feeling and a totally different kind of body language.
Well, before I let you go, you know, are you looking at ballet differently today than you were, say, a year and 2 months ago prior to the pandemic? I'm wondering if that's the case, because so much has happened and the struggle to get a ballet up and running and danced is so much more difficult today. Are you looking at the form any differently today?
I think we are in a transition time. I think COVID has changed a lot when it comes to our entertainment habits, to our level of comfort in being in large spaces with large gatherings. And I don't know what are the lasting effects of those changes. So depending on how we see the future developing, then we will need to adapt to that. As far as my personal view, I think the arts are just as important and vital today as they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. The arts are the expression of our soul, while business is the expression of our intellect. And to be a complete human being, you need soul and intellect. Just one of them, you know, if you just go with the intellect, well, then computers are always going to beat you. And if you have just soul, well, you can survive, because the world needs business in order to move forward. So I think we are an essential part of humanity. We are an essential part also of the economic equation of any country, and especially the United States of America. The entertainment, art and entertainment industry is the third largest industry in the country, the third largest, grossing over $850 billion a year. So at this point, we just need to see where we go. Obviously, as artists, we love what we do. As administrators, we understand our place in the financial equation of this country, and now we just need to roll up our sleeves, keep our eyes open, be agile, because every turn that we take, there is something behind it that we can't anticipate, and just keep at it and keep working and save the arts.
All right. Well, you can save the arts and be a part of the arts this weekend or next weekend when Tulsa Ballet presents their signature series. Marcello, thanks very much for joining us.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Marcello Angelini, the artistic director of Tulsa Ballet, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa about the signature series at Studio K, which takes place this Friday through Sunday and next Friday through Sunday in a series of reduced capacity performances at their Studio K facility. And for those who don't wish to venture out in person, there will also be virtual performances this Saturday at 7 and Sunday, March 14th at 5 o'clock. The program will feature What If by Andrew McNichol, At the End Of by Yuri Yanofsky, and Parhelia by Jennifer Archibald. Details about the performances at tulsaballet.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.